Hey guys, welcome to an all-new edition of Combat Spotlight. I'm your host, David Bova, and I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Dibo.
What's up?
Hey, what's up, man?
Not much.
So, dude, we have a lot to take care of.
Oh yeah, a lot of ground to cover.
A lot of ground to cover for the past couple of weeks, and we'll also like to dip into what's coming up in the next couple of weeks. First things first, everybody knows this by now. If you haven't found out about this, then you probably live under a rock.
And have no access to any social media or, yeah, like David said, you just completely live under a rock if you don't know this bit of information.
I don't even think it's like the not social media thing. I think you just have to be plain old ignorant.
Yeah, because it was announced almost like on every news outlet, almost every media outlet, any fight outlet, any kind of outlet that had to do with sports. Like this was a huge announcement for the sports world.
Did you see the farewell the Habs gave to George St. Pierre during the Flyers game?
Yep, I seen that. That was pretty awesome.
They like to honor their national locals. Heroes, their locals, but they give GSP the little extra something, you know?
And of course, he's come in and he's done like the puck drops at a few games. Like he did it last year before the Bisping fight. Him and Bisping were at the Bell Center, did a puck drop.
Yeah.
And actually, he went in and did like a motivational speech like for the team like before they went on the ice.
Yeah. You know, it's nothing.
Which where like that joke meme like came from. So what do I have to do? Punch you in the head? That was the best like overdubbed video I've ever seen, because like he got GSP's broken English on point.
Yeah. Oh, in the locker room.
Yeah. The locker room pep talk with the Habs, the Montreal Canadiens. But yeah, the official word is GSP retired, George St. Pierre.
Yeah, he retired, but you know what? I'm seeing all these interviews, ESPN MMA on the YouTube channel. They just put out an interview with Ariel Helwani. Interview him saying, you know, do you think that, not Ariel Helwani, I'm off today, dude. They were interviewing Firas Sahabi, and Firas was saying that he still has one fight left in him. Now, that could just be some sort of promotional tactic to keep GSP relevant for the next 2 years. But what do you think? You think he's actually done now?
I've seen, like, the other speculating, like, rumors out there that he will fight again, but for the right price. Like, that type of deal.
Well, the right price?
Like, you know, it's got to be a mega contract and a mega, like, pay-per-view deal for him to, like, come back, I think.
Do you remember when he sat ringside to one of Conor McGregor's fights?
Yeah.
I think it was just in October against Khabib. He really wanted to fight the winner of that. McGregor, for all the lucrative incentives and fighting what's his name?
Well, of course, just fighting Khabib is fighting Khabib. You know, you're fighting the top of the pyramid right now.
You have the whole mystique of his 27-0 record. You know, it's unbelievable. Like, that's unprecedented at all. I mean, okay, let's take a look at some undefeated-looking fighters for a second, you know? Michael Venom Page, still undefeated.
Yep. Just came off his win against Paul Daly at Bellator for the welterweight Grand Prix.
Yeah. Did you think it was robbery?
No, I honestly thought he was going to win, but like...
Well, I thought it was going to win too, yeah. But when you actually watch the fight, he spends a whole lot of time off his back eating it.
He did. He ate some shots from Daly on the ground.
Yeah.
He really did. But then he had some significant strikes on Daly too, like those flying knees. And
yeah.
I think he had more of the significant strikes, like standing up, hands down for sure. But yeah, Daly had the ground game.
Who would have thought Daly would have brought in some wrestling into the fight? I thought it would have kept it standing. And just...
Well, I think to fight Venom Page, I think you have to. Because like I think it's totally not his fight style. His fight style is stand up with you and strike with you, and that total unorthodox style he has. Yeah, I don't think Venom Page really has like a ground game other than just stuffing it and defending it and being able to get back up the way he was in the later rounds of that fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because earlier, yeah, no, when Daly had him on the ground, he had him. He was smothering him. Like Venom Page couldn't get out. Till like the later rounds, Venom Page was finally able to maneuver his way out, get out, stand back up. But I think to beat him, you gotta use that strategy.
Yeah. I mean, MVP kind of looked like a fish out of water in that fight. You know, he had his moments. He did separate. He landed some strikes. But for the most part, Paul Daly, like, in an uncharacteristic form of himself, you know, he chose to wrestle.
Yep.
This is a guy that was out-wrestled for 3 rounds back in the UFC, his final UFC fight, was so frustrated due to the wrestling that he sucker-punched Josh Koscheck to get, you know, to get banned for life. So
I was actually just watching a video on that earlier, like, fighters the UFC wants, like, to forget, and he's one of them.
Who else was on there?
Well, there was, like, Tim Sylvia, there was, of course, like, Tito Ortiz, even though you can't forget Tito Ortiz. Like, of course, the organization wants to because there's that bad beef there.
Yeah.
Anybody that the UFC has bad beef with, they want, like, everybody to forget. But it's funny, most of the guys that have bad beef with are, like, the legends, you know, or like the big name people that you just can't forget.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to forget Mike Goldberg. You're not, he was the voice of the UFC for so long. Like, you're not going to forget that.
No.
Even though he's not a fighter, he's somebody they're trying to, like, you know, cover up. And of course, like, look what they did when they got rid of him. They didn't even honor him. They really just, like, kind of let him go and, like, not, they tried to make him fade, but.
Yeah, well, personally, I get off watching Bellator sometimes. It's so nostalgic. You have Big John McCarthy and Mike Goldberg in there, and then you have some of the greatest UFC vets to enter in there, Rory McDonald or Gegard Mousasi.
Even in this last card, we had Roy Nelson versus Krokop.
Yeah.
And that was very
nostalgic. Rematch for 2011.
So nostalgic.
Okay, you know what? Mirko Krokop has, like, turned his career around in these later years. Winning the Ryzen tournament not too long ago, coming over to Bellator.
You know, it was, like, surprising.
Avenging losses.
Roy Nelson still has that chin. Like, Krokop would fed him so many uppercuts that I thought would put him down, but, like, Nelson just took it. And you see his head, like after every shot.
Did you see that picture of him online where he shaved his beard and he looks like a totally different person? He looks like he, like, aged, like, 20 years younger.
No, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that picture yet. I have to go look at that, actually.
I was wondering if some of the mystique of his iron chin was, you know, taken away with that.
What do you think is going to come out on top of that Grand Prix?
You know, we're talking about the welterweight Grand Prix?
Yeah, because there's some notable fighters. Of course, like Douglas Lima beat Andrei Koreshkov, which those guys have fought before, but that was crazy how he choked them out cold.
Douglas Lima fought. Okay.
Koreshkov choked him out cold.
That should have been a championship fight, to be honest.
That really
should have. They both were former champs.
Yeah.
But John Fitch will get ragdolled by Rory.
Neiman Gracie, of course, defeated Ed Ruth. So Neiman's going to take on whoever wins out of that match, McDonald. And
I see a blueprint for it. I see when Damian Maia fought Rory McDonald. He might lose the first round, but he's going to keep the pace on. And I think when...
because Neiman's got crazy jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, they all have crazy
jiu-jitsu. He's a Gracie, of course, yeah.
When you hear Gracie's in there, expect great jiu-jitsu. That's just how it goes. I mean, Crone Gracie, man. Crone Gracie from UFC on ESPN, Velasquez
and Ngannou. Yeah, UFC Fight Night, Velasquez and Ngannou. He had a great debut.
That was...
the way he took Caceres' back, like, against the cage, like, while having his back. Like,
you see the weird leg hook he had that he used to pin him back?
Pin him back. And
that's
then the
something
way,
I've never seen before, and he uses against the cage.
And then he uses his other foot to push off the cage, and it's like, they did, like, such a fluid roll.
Yeah.
And he had his back. I was like, what was this?
It was such, such a hand fight for him, though. Initially, get the arm underneath his chin. And then keeping it like his chin underneath the elbow. It was such a battle because Bruce Leroy knew to break the grip. But after a while, when he go to break the grip, it just seemed like Gracie was just light years ahead away of just being able to switch it, like constantly changing from where the attack is coming from until he figured out Bruce Leroy.
And he was able to slip that arm right under his chin. And then, you just cease.
Finish it.
He looked really patient, like, getting that choke in. Like, he knew exactly how to get it and, like, just maneuver his arms, like, around, like, Bruce Leroy's guard.
That's Crone Gracie. He's just really laid back.
And that's just, like, the beginning. Literally the beginning. It's his first UFC debut fight.
I was watching highlights of him competing in Abu Dhabi was it 2011? And his father was in the corner. And his father was completely, like, lifeless for his first two matches because he just submitted them with ease. Mm-hmm. And his father, Hickson, is just sitting there like, is normal. And then after a while, they went against, who do they go against? They went against a more explosive, dangerous opponent. And the guy was working his game, and it started to frustrate Hickson. So Hickson starts making these, like, chicken noises, you know, like, and, like, this actually makes the other opponent engage in for a double. Krohn just snatches that neck up within a second. Completes his division, three subs in a row, you know, that doesn't happen at the highest level of competition.
I like what he said at the end of the match too. Everybody better watch their necks. In the post fight interview with Joe.
Yeah. And then he dropped what was it, an F bomb?
Yeah, he totally did. On national TV, which was great.
Throw him on a pay-per-view next time. You're not gonna have that problem.
Oh no. Oh no, no, no.
Hey
no.
Man.
Speaking of pay-per-views,
I feel like it would be a robbery if we did not bring up what's to come this weekend, dude.
Of course. Well, actually, let me, since we're on the topic of Velasquez and Ganu, like, how about that 26-second knockout, man?
Okay.
I did not expect that.
Okay. Now, I just want to sound like, although some of the lures, some of the listeners, they may think of me as the next Nostradamus for MMA, you know, because I see in the future, I predict a lot of these things. But Luke, on the other hand, he didn't tap into his powers, you know, the third eye. He didn't look beyond of what was there. He didn't read between the lines. And as a result, he took Velasquez.
I took Velasquez, but not losing in 26 seconds.
I'm teasing you, Luke. No one expected him to lose in 26 seconds. I thought at least round three or two.
That's what I was going to say. Second round, like TKO by Ngannou, or it was going to go like third round decision. Like Velasquez.
Yeah. Okay, but dude, check this out. So when Velasquez made his debut on UFC on Fox with Junior Dos Santos, it was the first ever title fight headlined on Major Network Television.
Yes.
Major Network Television. And
of course,
they didn't air the full fight card. All they showed was one fight on Big Fox. The rest was all streamed on Facebook. And back then, you know, Paul's internet was even worse than it is now. So,
thank God some of us here in Gunawaga have Bell.
Or Semper, or First Nations.
Well, those didn't exist at the time. It was just either Bell's or Paul's.
Oh, at the time you had Bell?
Yeah.
Well, aren't you the lucky one?
I am the very lucky one.
The smart one, baby.
The one that does not get any leg.
Oh.
But yeah, 26 seconds. That's all it took for Ngannou to take out Velasquez.
What did Velasquez look like? He looked out of characteristic, man.
A little bit, but it looked like history kind of repeated itself. You know, almost the same kind of shot with Dos Santos.
History always repeats itself.
So I think there's going to be a rematch, and I think Velasquez will take the rematch if Dana allows it.
Probably. I don't think you rush Ngannou the way he did.
Yep.
He tried taking center. He tried ripping these sloppy switch kicks that, like, took 5 minutes to get there. And Ngannou could have, like, you know, went to his corner, gave his corner a high five, pat his baby on the back.
Take a
know?
Drink of water, then come
Make
back
a
in.
Sandwich, come back in, and it's still going on. So, we'll see what happens after that. Was there anything else interesting of note on that card?
Oh, yeah. Vicente Luque and Brian Barberina, man.
Oh,
that
my
was
God.
A slugfest.
Okay.
That slugfest. Right till the last seconds.
Yeah. The last second, the fight did end, but I really wish it went into a judge's decision because I really like Barberina. He seems to be the dude that takes out all the underdogs. If you remember a couple of years ago, there was a boy, a man, who went by the name of Sage Northcutt.
Yep.
And that was the YouTube's, like, golden boy, you know? No swearing, like, cut clean, like, spick and span Christian.
Been training training in martial arts since a very, very, very young age.
He was bred for this shit.
Yep.
You know, he was ready. And, you know, just for whatever reason,
Barberina beat him.
He started going on a decline right after Barberina beat him. And in that fight, too, it was pretty competitive. Sage uses his sidekicks, his distance, some takedowns every now and then, but he fades. He fades around the second round, and Barbarena was able to take full advantage of that with...
Well, if you couldn't tell from this past card, his chin, the punishment he was taking from Luque.
Oh my God, that chin is ungodly. He's like a welterweight version of Mark Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
What is in that chin?
Probably iron and iron. Titanium alloy.
Not just titanium alloy. Those people in
it's vibranium.
Yeah, not even. Adamantium.
Yeah, adamantium, man. Just like Wolverine's claws.
Striker at his.
But hands down, Barbarina has a chin, and that was I called that fight fighter of the night, hands down. I watched like in my eyes though, like I know the UFC gave them the bonus, and I said it to him like I watched UFC with my mom, surprising or not, and I told her I'm like these guys are getting the bonus. Like,
been there, done that.
Yeah, hands down, these guys are getting the bonus. They're fight of the night, hands down. Just I was entertained.
Hey man, if I could play some bingo with my mom, you know, to keep her some company, she could watch some fights with you to keep you company. And then you order some atomic wings or something. Everything's cute.
Of course, I missed the Felder and Vic fight.
Did you?
Yeah, I missed that.
Do you want me to give you a little recap? I fell asleep,
but I woke up just in time to see Velasquez get knocked out in 26 seconds.
Okay. It's funny.
Yes, give me the lowdown. I didn't watch any highlights. I just heard that Felder won by decision.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just a decision. It was a war, man. It was a crazy war. And with 20 seconds left in the fight, Paul Felder had a kick landed to his chest, which caused his lung to collapse a little. Ooh. So he was in the hospital for a while, and doctors had told him that his lung will probably heal on its own. It was a very minor injury where it just kind of like sunk downwards. It wasn't in proper place, which could lead to all kinds of other complications. But they said, we're going to let it heal for the next 3 days, then we're going to take action after that. He needed surgery, very minor surgery, like an hour long. And throughout that whole hour was like, you know, tiny preparation, stuff like that, you know. Like, damn it, do you have your glove on? You're not allowed to enter in here without your glove. You get your glove on now. And then the guy leaves and he's just like, I'm back, dude. My glove's on. Can you just like calm down? We get paid the same amount.
Yep.
And they paid him. And now Paul Felder's a free man. So, yeah.
Oh, we actually didn't say it. So, the Bellator welterweight Grand Prix. What do you think?
Out of everyone.
Out of the four. Out of the, well, the five that are still in there, like you said, you already predicted McDonald going forward, but out of those two, Gracie, Lima, MVP, who do you see coming out on top?
I would really, 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 really like to see Rory McDonald go against Douglas Lima.
In the final, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that fight was very close. It was already a title fight. If it's not Douglas Lima, I want Michael Venom Page.
That's where I'm leaning. I'm leaning towards Venom Page or Lima.
I think Lima is way more competitive, way more well-rounded.
And experienced. He still won the belt. Yeah, still is a champ, eh?
No,
I don't know.
The belt is following McDonald everywhere because McDonald took the belt from him.
Yep.
So when I first started getting into betting and everything, that was one of the first bets I've ever tried and I ever won. I decided to do a two-fight parlay. I picked Chael Sonnen decision over Rampage, and I picked Rory McDonald over Douglas Lima, and it was the first time I won. It was just like a couple of dollars. I won like 100 and something. Yeah, chump change. Who cares? But to me, I was like, oh my God, I did it. All I did was sit in front of a TV screen all day, you know, just thought a little, and boom, there's a ticket in my hand with money. Because those are the kind of things I'm really good at betting at. I can't leave my hands
dry,
like with luck. I can't put my hands into luck. Like I need to like have some sort of calculated like formula involved into this. Like I was telling you in the first episode of these, when you start making predictions for fighters, it's easy as hell to say he's going to win. No, he's going to win because that's just a 50-50% chance.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you want to get technical, there's also a draw and a no contest involved. So there's almost like a quarter, one quarter way that the fight could end if you think about it. But when you factor in all the other methods of winning, you're only down to like a 3.5% chance of winning or something like that, you know? I know my math sucks, and anyone listening to this is like, dude, that's not how statistics works. But I'm just trying to keep this conversation flowing.
Hey, betting,
do you want
betting,
me to just like
betting,
be quiet, look at my phone?
Works a little differently.
And then you get your proper number after like 20 minutes from now and a couple of like, you know, sweaty breakdowns and a little bit of complication of whether if this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I'm sorry, Luke. I'm over that.
But anyways. Yeah, the rest of that tournament, April 27th, John Fitch takes on Rory McDonald to see who goes on to the semis for that tournament.
Okay, are they completing the whole quarterfinals in one night?
I don't know that. I haven't seen the scheduling yet. All I know is the that match is on the 27th, and then after that, I think they have to schedule when the semis are taking place.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be two fights, then down to one. I can see them putting both semis on one night.
That could happen. I seen something weird announced by one. They're doing a flyweight Grand Prix.
Okay.
Gary Tonin's on the card. Ooh.
I'm sure Mighty Mouse too.
No, Mighty Mouse is a part of the tournament. It's a flyweight tournament.
That's what I mean. Of course, but, Mighty Mouse, Gary Tonin.
But the weird thing is that they have one lightweight tournament fight. It's just Eddie Alvarez. It's like they
that makes no sense.
Couldn't put him onto a card with a bunch of other lightweights. I think they want to stack this because it has how many Americans are on the card? Tonin, Aoki, and no, not Aoki, Alvarez. And Mighty Mouse. That's three Americans. And the rest are like well-known names. Shinya Aoki.
Okay.
That Edward Folliung. I can't pronounce his name. He took the belt from Aoki, so now they're rematching. And okay, you know who Aoki is.
Yeah, yeah.
But let me just give you guys a quick summary, right? Summarize of who the, you know, who the hell Shinya Aoki is. But anyway, Shinya Aoki is like one of those old school flying jiu-jitsu dudes. What I mean by flying is that like most people start off their back, they'll look for a takedown, they'll advance position.
He flies in on you doing some armbar or triangle or sweep. Or
he'll clinch with you like it looks like a wrestling match. You know, you got an arm behind the neck, you got an arm on the bicep, you know, you got some good control. Boom, flying armbar. Boom, flying triangle. Boom, flying gogoplata.
That's what I was going to say, gogoplata, omoplata is like he's... Yeah, he's crazy.
He's crazy. You know, the UFC tried to sign him a couple of years ago.
Really?
There was a few winters ago where ONE FC was looking to expand their stars. So they offered the UFC a couple of fight contracts just to get them used to the, you know, the American side of promotion.
Yeah, yeah.
Then come back to Asia with a bunch of new experience and championship material and stuff like that. And, yeah. Don't think it happened. All right, here, dude. I've looked over this.
Now we can move on to the juicy thing we want to talk about the most. So, UFC 235.
So one of the biggest news within the past week is, of course, Georges St-Pierre's retirement, also known as GSP.
George Rush St. Pierre.
Georges Rush St. Pierre.
Yeah, dude finished his career with a 26-2 record. Only two losses, Matt Serra and Matt Hughes. It's funny.
Which he avenged.
It's two guys named Matt. It's just funny. It's a funny one. But yes, he did avenge.
If your name's Matt, just stay the fuck away from GSP unless you want to get beat up after you beat him up.
He's actually fought Matt Hughes three times. The first time for the title, second time to gain the title from Matt Hughes. And the third time was just a rematch.
It was because he lost to Serra, and he's like, well, I'm going on my fucking hate tour.
Yep.
And at the moment, he finished with a 26-2 record.
His first fight ever was Ivan Menjivar.
Okay. Now, if you have no idea who Ivan Menjivar is, Ivan Menjivar is a beast. Ivan Menjivar is also very undersized.
Yep.
So if Georges St-Pierre could fight him at welterweight back in the day, Ivan Menjivar wasn't getting any smaller or bigger. Ivan Menjivar has always been kind of a short dude.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard-working dude with great jiu-jitsu. I've had a couple of jiu-jitsu classes with him. I met him a couple of times at the Fight Quest events. He's not the most biggest guy, but he knows what to do with what he's got. And he's very good at attacking the back.
Yep.
I remember who was it? He had won a couple of fights with rear naked choke by taking the back. And then something weird happened at one point back in 2013, I believe, where Uriah Faber was matched up against Ivan Menjivar.
Okay, I remember that fight, yep.
And Uriah Faber rode him like a backpack and submitted him standing up.
Mm-hmm.
That was when Uriah Faber was going on the run to get his title shot.
Before he was just breaking his hands, too.
He was just breaking his hands. He had no proper technique. It was a lot of hard sparring and a lot of conditioning. And then they brought over Dwayne Lang Budwig. I said that completely wrong, eh? Dwayne Bang Ludwig. What did I say? Dwayne
Lang Budwig. You said Budwig instead of Ludwig.
Let's just, edit that for the sake of my sanity.
Nah, we're going to keep it in there. But yeah, yes.
Sanity.
Two fights versus Matt Serra. One win, one loss. Of course, he avenged it. And of course, George St. Pierre said in his interview, he won, went into that fight very, very, very nervous. Like where his nerves were actually getting to him.
Yeah.
And two, he underestimated Matt Serra too.
Yeah.
A little bit. And you could see it in the rematch with Serra.
He was staring him right in the freaking eyes.
Stared him in the eyes and dominated, pounded him, like just did everything that, like, just to avenge.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Okay, so when you first got into the sport, were you looking more into the sports psychology of things, or were you just looking at like a physique on a person against like a guy with like a, you know, like an average Joe style body?
No, not really, because like I was going for a guy based on his experience and what I've seen in terms of what he can do in terms of skill.
Oh, like styles making matches.
Yep.
Like, that took like a while to
like
catch
a
on.
Fighter, like a fighter's like style, like how he fights. Like I love the brawlers, you know, like the Tito Ortizes and like the Chuck Liddells. But I also loved watching like fighters like Randy Couture, who like utilize like their wrestling so well. Matt Hughes even. Like, I knew Matt Hughes was a different fighter from other fighters, just the way he was able to wrestle and ground and pound, where some of these other fighters back then were just sluggers, you know? They just knew how to throw ones and twos, and if they landed that one lucky shot on you, you were going out.
You were tut fin.
Yeah, you were tut fin.
You were tut.
But yeah, fighters like watching, like, the Diaz brothers, or like Randy Couture, like, the way, like, and Matt Serra, the guys that utilize like the ground game and wrestling, GSP, even like those were the guys that made me really like get into MMA and watching it.
Yeah.
Because those guys could stand up and strike, but at the same time, they could take it to the ground.
Yeah. Okay. Like, this is going to be a little weird, but what do you prefer over the, you know, every aspect of MMA? What's your favorite aspect?
I think jiu-jitsu is my favorite aspect of all MMA because
I could tell.
Because just.
You're a gentle giant. You don't want to render someone unconscious.
Well, no, knockouts are awesome when you see it, like, you know, spinning back kicks or like spinning elbows or a well-timed like hook.
It looks cool doing it, but
submissions.
When you're in sparring, and let's just say like your boxing gloves like a year and a half old and the padding's starting to fade, and you're sparring and you give someone a nice punch and they feel it like. I have a bad habit of apologizing. People hit me with bombs and I'm just like, "Oh." Like, I'm like, "That's nice, you know?" And then they're like, "I'm sorry." And I'm like, "Fucking keep it coming, you know?" But that's just sparring.
But
though.
The jiu-jitsu aspect, I like it because one, like when it first got used on me, I felt like Doctor Strange with the whole like, you know, like teach me like thing when like the what's her name? I can't remember her character. But when she puts her... The ancient one. Yeah,
the ancient one.
When she puts her thumb on his head and you see him go through like that whole trippy sequence and then he comes back and he's like, "Teach me." That was me with jiu-jitsu.
She's like, "You're not ready."
Like my teacher came in with like a group of purple belts and probably like higher and they like just schooled me, man.
Dude, you start... Okay.
And not even just regular purple belts. These are Brazilian top team like... purple belts too that like compete and
your team is BTT. I have Gracie Baja.
Yeah,
we all have different lineages, and people used to shit on VMMA saying like, they don't have the best coaches. There's not a lot of money in there. It's a front. Blah 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 blah. But let me tell you something. Okay, I'm going to get a little real here. I'll even slow down to talking because I have a very important point to make. VMMA. Vinu MMA, run by Stefan Vinu. and maybe to an extent Robbie Dixon, but I have yet to meet him, and Peter Thomas. What those guys do is something very amazing for this community. Now, I don't want to get cheesy on you guys, and I don't want to get emotional, but I've been a part of that year. I've been a part of that gym for nearly 5 years. I don't know how long you have guys committed to something for 5 years. Maybe your wrestling career, you know, maybe skateboarding or something like that. But this is my adult life. This is different. This isn't something where I'm just like doing it for the hell of it. I feel like it's very beneficial for me to go there. I could have an incredibly bad week, a bad day. You know, things could be going wrong. Family issues, financial stress, just not feeling good on the inside. Like maybe I have a tiny headache. It isn't a migraine yet, but it's a headache. They will turn to a migraine if I don't treat it. But I'll have a headache and I think about it and I go, okay, I could sit around and suffer around on the couch all day. Maybe I could get up and release some endorphins and sweat and learn and help my teammates out and have a feel of belonging and fulfillment on the way home back from the gym, you know? There's something about VMMA. It's a nice community, but I have to call it a fighter's gym. It's not a gym for the the faint of heart, because this gym has a bunch of pro fighters in there, a bunch of amateur fighters, and even the amateur fighters like myself. I've yet to step into the ring, but I've competed in jiu-jitsu before. I still consider myself a competitor, but the difference between jiu-jitsu and doing the striking arts and MMA, where it includes some striking, obviously there's wrestling. Wrestling's to talk about another time, because I have a deep, 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 passionate love. Did I say love? Hate. I have no love for that. I have a passionate hate towards wrestling. But I'll do it. I'll do it. It's a necessary evil. I mean, it has to be done. But I want to give a shout out to VMMA. I think what Stefan Venue is doing, offering a training facility on the res, on the Mohawk Reserve of Gunawage, South Shore of Montreal, half hour away from Ormstown, Huntington, all the towns around here, St. Isidore. There's so many great towns that could all just come together, come on the res. Let's learn some good, you know, some good skill. Let's get some good rounds in. Let's build a camaraderie. You know, let's work towards something. Let's all reach these goals. There is no time for drama in the gym. It happens. Believe me, it happens everywhere. It happens at work. It happens in your family. It happens with your friends. It happens with just about anything. With VMMA. VMMA keeping me grounded. That's something I can't imagine myself never doing. Since I was 18 years old, I knew I wanted to join a gym, but I had personal issues to take care of. I turned 22 years old. I have not looked back in over like, what are we on right now? 5.5 years going on to 6. You know, like I am ready. I'm red Z. Now, I don't care if I step into the ring or not, but I want to compete. It's really up to the coaches. The coaches want me to get in there. They want me to show me what I have. They want me to put it on someone. But, man, the record streak that everyone's going on, the finishing streaks, my gym has really started to make a name for themselves. So it's like there's pressure, you know? Luke, do you feel any pressure like this? Has anyone pressured you to try to fighting? Try to step into the cage, you know?
Not pressured me, but they gave me like they tried to plant the cookie in my head, you know, the thought, the idea. And there was times when like I wanted to, but like I wanted to make sure I was like good at it first. Like I know I got a great striking game, you know, like I've done Muay Thai, I've done boxing, and I know like I've done some sparring and I can hurt some people.
Sparring's most important.
But before I even joined like jiu-jitsu, that's what I was. I had no ground game. And then joining jiu-jitsu and having my ass kicked in that perspective really, really, really opened my eyes to, okay, I'm absolutely not ready for this at all.
Yeah.
Because I can stand up with my opponent all I want to, but the second he takes me down to the ground, I'm screwed.
When you say stand up, you mean throwing hands and kicks or standing up like grabbing a lapel and then...
Well, no, stand up. Like I mean, like striking. You know, like clinching, going toe to toe, boxing, countering.
Yeah,
like throwing kicks, knees, like all that stuff. I think I'm confident. I'm great in it, but it was my ground game that like I really needed to work on. Now, now I think if I wanted to, I probably could just one for the hell of it. Cause like, I feel like I'm very confident now in like my ground game. Like I know how to get out of bad positions. Like I know how to get out of full mounts, side control, if someone's to put me in there.
Okay,
and,
Luke.
And now I know how to actually get side control to end mount or pass guards.
All right, Luke.
So now incorporating that with the striking, I think I could. But yeah, no, I never got pressured. It was always just like someone trying to put the idea in my head. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I will try it one time. I will.
All right, Luke. You've said too much. I think throughout this journey of ours, you know, into our foray into the podcast, at some point, I think we need to step in the cage and just do it.
Yeah.
We're going to have to.
Absolutely.
We're going to have to.
It's going
to
happen.
I think...
At least once in my lifetime.
I'm like 160 something.
Got to take into account too. I just did turn 31 too. So like I'm getting up there, you know, like MMA, it's for the young guys. It really is. I'd say so.
You are in your prime right now.
No, I'm not lying, dude.
I probably am.
Prime is anywhere from 30 to 32 or 29 to 32?
You know me, David. I'm just trying to stay humble as possible.
You're just humble?
I'm just trying to stay humble. Yeah, no, I probably could do it. I just got to put my mind to it and get the motivation and get back in there.
Yeah, come to the gym down the road. We are going to put it on you. I'm going to put it on you so bad, dude.
we'll see, man. We'll see. Like
before,
I said,
before you even see what the... is coming, you know, a couple of brah, brah.
Well, I'll be ready for the whatever it is.
It's me holding it in. I'm trying to sound professional.